Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Doron Kornbluth. Doron is a speaker and a best-selling author of several books, Why Marry Jewish? Why Be Jewish? Raising Kids to Love Being Jewish, it sounds like. And he's also a licensed tour guide in Eretz Yisrael and lives in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Good day to you. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and I'm glad to be with you. Thanks for inviting me to speak.
Thank you so much. And we're here actually to talk about the coming issue of the Jewish Action, and which is actually going to be in the summer of 2012. And Doron wrote a very fascinating article about something most people, I'm sure, never even think about. It's called the Cremation Challenge. So I read it. I was actually blown away by this. I had no idea this was going on. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what's going on out there as far as how it's changed, where you would imagine most Jewish people would be buried. But unfortunately, it's turned out that at least a third of them, as you say, in North America actually get cremated. So what's going on?
So I'll tell you, via a story. I grew up in Montreal, and Montreal is a very traditional Jewish city. And the idea that Jews would choose to be cremated was always like just an impossibility in my mind. People more religious, less religious, but like it was soon after the Holocaust. There's no way. And then I was on a speaking tour in Florida a few years ago, and I see ads in Jewish newspapers in Florida for Jewish funeral homes offering what they call Jewish cremations. I couldn't believe it, and I started researching the subject. And it turns out that we've kind of been asleep at the wheel a little bit, where only a generation ago, the percentage of Jews that were being cremated was negligible. A statistical blip. Now, there's no doubt that it's 25% of Jews in North America, and what most people involved think that it's easily over a third, and it's rapidly approaching 40% of Jews, of the Jewish dead in North America, are being cremated. It's something that's coming under the radar, and it's basically mirroring American trends, meaning that the overall percentage of cremations in America amongst non-Jews, amongst the mainstream population, is over 40%. It's going to be 50% by 2017, and Jews are simply not far behind.
So but the thing is this, I mean, as you say in the article, Doron, I mean, the point is that, unfortunately, after someone passes away, there's not very much time to make a decision. So this all has to happen before, as far as education.
Correct. The article is actually a sort of a summary and a what to do reflection of the book that I put out last year. So about 6 months ago, I released a book, Mosaic Press released it, called Cremation or Burial, A Jewish View. And in that book, I outline what is happening, why people are choosing cremation, and they're not idiots. This is a mistake that we make. We make it when somebody's doing something. There is, based on the information that they have, that a typical non-observant Jewish person hears today, based on the information they have, cremation seems like a very reasonable choice. There's intelligent people making rational decisions.
Especially if they have no religious background, then why not?
Exactly. And, look at it from, let's sort of put ourselves in their shoes. Cremation is much cheaper. You can't get away from that. It is much cheaper. There are exceptions. People can do an expensive cremation, and people can do a cheaper burial. But overall, the vast majority of cremations are going to cost a person $2,000 or $3,000, and a burial is going to cost a person $8,000 to $10,000. That's the norm, which means that for somebody who is not clear on why burial is important, we are basically suggesting to them, yes, spend an extra $5,000 or $6,000 on something that doesn't really make a difference to you. So we have to be very proactive in preventing. Preventative medicine, as our doctor is always telling us, that's the key. As he said, I mean, I do deal with this regularly in terms of last-ditch efforts to try and stop cremations after the person has died. It can be done, but it's much harder. So the goal is going to be to wake the Jewish world up and really focus on it. And that's the point of my book, Cremation or Burial. That's the point of the article in Jewish Action. That's why we're talking about it and trying to get people, just informed as to what the reasons are for burial.
Let's talk about, you mentioned in the book and in the article, four reasons that you think that it's so popular today. So let's talk about the first, which you call modern mobility. So what does that mean?
So it used to be that people lived in the same town, the same city, the same village, as their parents, their grandparents. So having the family together, having the possibility of visiting a grave, or even if they weren't visiting regularly, once a year, a yard site, Mother's Day, Father's Day, today, it's the norm, not an exception, it's the norm that kids go to different cities. They switch several cities along the way. Grandkids are all over the place. So, for instance, a typical senior retiring in Florida, which is one of the highest Jewish cremation rates in the country, is saying to themselves, well, why am I going to be buried in Florida? I don't have any kids here. I don't even live here. You know, or if they're in New York, the kids are out in California or moved to Eretz Yisrael. So the idea is, nobody is actually going to visit my grave anyway. I'm going to be alone anyway. Why not, in that case, be cremated, and they can take me with them, put me in the urn? It's a good point. No.
That's a very, very good point. So how do you overcome that point? I mean, I would imagine you could come up with some kind of a campaign showing, you know, grandchildren or great-grandchildren coming to a burial site of where somebody is buried and say that, you know, you'll not be forgotten, you know, no matter what happens, so generations will still remember you, right? I mean, couldn't we do something like that?
It's a great idea, and if the people are religious, it would certainly have a big impact. The problem is that once you leave the more traditional community, graveside visitation is very rare. And even the people who die, or you know, for their own graves, they don't really understand why it's important. So the way I respond to the mobility challenge is simply by saying, okay, so let's say, Joe dies, and the kid, you know, takes the urn, but then you know, Joe's wife also dies. The kid gets that urn, and then Joe's wife, her parents also dies. Now this couple have, you know, the kids have four urns, and then. Next generation, what are the grandkids going to do with them? And when this couple, who are holding urns, when they move and when they retire and when they go to Florida, they go to California, you know, our lives and our homes are simply not destined. They're not able to treat cremated remains respectfully. At some point, usually in one generation, certainly by two, they're going to be thrown out or poured out in the park or whatever. So the whole, you're not solving the mobility challenge.
I thought that I read someplace that sometimes they actually bury them in a... In a cemetery?
Yes, sometimes they do. It's a very small percentage. Most cremated remains are scattered, but about 10% are buried.
10% are buried.
In which case, what you saw, okay. Yeah. In which case, there's one interesting thing that you might like. What I try and wake people up to an idea, which is that the most famous, one of maybe, probably the most famous burial in the Torah, all right, if you have to choose one, so one is going to be Avram Avinu and Sarah. The other one is going to be the Grand Torah, where, who was buried? Moshe Rabbeinu is buried by none other than a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hashem buried, God buried Moses. Now we know that it says very clearly that no one knows where his grave is. And no one will know, meaning Hashem hid it. God hid it so that it wouldn't become a place of idol worship. Even so, when this happened 3,300 years ago, there was cremation in the world. There was Zoroastrian, you know, sky vultures where they would, you know, let the animals and the birds, you know, attack the body. God could have done anything. God could have scattered his remains over the Dead Sea, over the Red Sea, the place of his greatest triumph. God could have had all those options. But even though no one would ever visit Moses' grave, God chose burial, because burial has nothing to do with visitation. Visitation is a very important thing. I love doing it. I do it myself. I connect to it. But even if you don't, it has nothing to do with actual burial.
Okay, so then that was one reason. Then you talk about the environmental issues, okay, why some people feel, you know, from a going green, this is a better way.
Yeah, I spent months researching this. Believe it or not, I kind of disguised myself and I went into crematorium. I have the specs, the blueprints of dozens of different crematory ovens. I really got into it in the stats. And as it turns out, there are two sort of environmental critiques of a burial. One is that it just destroys the environment, meaning that it is pouring toxins into the ground, and it is bad for the environment. And the other is that it takes up land. So the interesting thing is, environmentalists are not in favor of cremation. The cremation industry has created, and it's a $1 billion industry, the cremation industry has created an amazing image that they are environmentally friendly. But the truth is, they're not. What do they say? They point out that burials, American burials, are very problematic for the environment. What are the problems? The problems are embalming, where a typical American burial, not Jewish, they will embalm, they take out the blood and the other liquids, and they put in formaldehyde and all kinds of toxins in order that for the viewing of the body at the service, the body should look good and it'll last for a long time. That's terrible for the environment. I mean, you know, hundreds of gallons of toxins going in on a regular basis, plus metal caskets. We're talking a Golden Gate Bridge every year is put into the ground. It's a tremendous waste of the environment. Mm-hmm. So, of course, environmentalists are critical of American burials, but almost only, there's a few other side issues, but embalming the metal caskets, which, according to Judaism, we don't do either of. So right. Judaism, our burials, Gvura Yisrael, is actually a very good example of what's called a green burial, where it is environmentally friendly.
Especially in Israel.
Sure, when they're just put into the ground. And in terms of the land use, people are always concerned that, you know, we don't have enough land in the country. We don't have land in the world. And why should I use my last choice? I don't want to hurt the environment. I want to keep the land for the living. Land is for the living. It's a big claim in the cremation movement. But the truth is, I did these stats. And if you run the numbers, if every American, not every Jew, that's only 1.5%, if every American citizen were to be buried, it would take 10,000 years to use up 1% of America's land. And presumably, there would be very few cemeteries lasting 10,000 years. So the idea that there isn't land, there's plenty of land available, usually within an hour of urban areas, it's simply a mistake.
Okay, let me ask you just a few other questions. First of all, I have a question about Reform rabbis. Do the Reform and Conservative rabbis push openly to have people buried kahalacha, or do they actually just push for cremation? Or they don't take a position at all?
Conservative rabbis are definitely against cremation. They will not stop it because they want people, if they cremate, still to connect Jewishly. So the conservative movement is clearly openly against cremation, but you know they have a different path in terms of dealing with it. They won't reject it at the end of the day. Reform rabbis, it depends on the community. I have a Reform rabbi friend who's actually helping me, promote my book Cremation or Burial because he really believes in it. Again, they're very into choice. So very few Reform rabbis I think would actually encourage cremation. Many will encourage burial, but they'll do whatever people want them to do. In California, probably most members of Reform congregations are being cremated by now, or close to it, if not a majority, very close to it. So they have to be very careful.
Okay. So, and then, from a halachic point of view, where does it say that you should be buried?
So it's actually a pasuk in the Devarim, which talks about the criminal, so the body can't be left overnight. And it says, Kavortik Brennan, you should surely bury him. And Chazal learned out a principle that it's not just a criminal it's talking about. It's talking about every Jew should be buried, properly buried. It's Gemara's, it's the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch. It's a clear Jewish law. D'raisa.
Okay, and then, of course, from a Kabbalistic point of view and so on, and we believe that the neshama and the guf, you know, are interrelated during lifetime and then separate. Isn't that also part of it? I mean,
well said. This is one of the troubling things when I talk with, you know, I give a lot of talks on the subject to, you know, around the country, and both to to lay people trying to encourage them to choose a burial, and also to educators to try and explain how to talk about the issue. And this is always one of those sensitive subjects, which is that in Jewish mysticism, proper burial is not a minor thing for the soul. Every mitzvah we do is a huge thing. It's hard to say what's chal and what's chamor, what's minor and major. But the proper Jewish burial is a huge thing. This is why there were so many instances that we hear of in terms of rabbis going to extraordinary efforts to give strangers proper burial. Because it's so important, and it's not just a sort of a dry mitzvah, if there's such a thing. But as you said, it affects the soul for eternity, and the way that the body is dealt with, according to Kabbalah, the soul feels it, meaning that the soul is feeling that burning. it's a horrible thing to go through. Nobody should know from it.
Right, and I think also you point out something which is really kind of the closure, and I know for a fact. I mean, I've seen people who cremated a loved one and then later on came back to regret it. No one ever regrets burying somebody the proper way, whereas when they cremate, many times people come back later on and realize that they made a mistake.
Yeah, in my experience, I think you described it well, and in my experience, it's something like 50%. It's really? Something like 50% of the people who openly will say at the end of the day that they regret it. Not everybody. Some, you know, some themselves say, no, I'm glad I did it. But it's, you know, especially amongst Jews. Because people, after a while, people, you know, they come to see that, wow, you know, this is a bigger decision than I realized. So what I tell people, just in terms of trying to deal with this problem, as you mentioned at the beginning, very wisely, being proactive about it, which is that it's not too late. In other words, the tipping point, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's famous phrase, the tipping point where certain ideas, they're minority, small ideas, and then they reach a certain point, and then it's already too late. They're a critical mass. They're sort of almost impossible to deal with. So, you know, that happened, by the way, in terms of intermarriage. You know, you mentioned before my book on intermarriage, Why Marry Jewish, which is, thank God, had a lot of help from evidence that it's been affected, but it came out in 2003. It was already, you know, by the time that we started dealing with intermarriage, you know, it's already mainstream. Most Jews are intermarrying.
Oh, yeah, no question was mainstream, that's for sure.
Right. Cremation is not yet there, meaning that even though it's over a third, still, most of those people are not that affiliated with the Jewish community. There is still a reluctance to cremate in many quarters, obviously Orthodox, but also conservative, unaffiliated, some Reformers, depending on where geographically a person is. So my point is that, and Rabbi Elchanan Zon of NASC and of the Chavadish in New York is sort of a leader effort of trying to make this, saving this mitzvah, the mashal, the parable that I give, is imagine if we were sitting somewhere and we saw before our very eyes that Hanukkah was disappearing, that 1% less every year, Hanukkah, 1% less of the Jewish people was keeping Hanukkah. And that we know that if we don't do anything, then in another generation or two, it's only going to be strictly Orthodox Jews who are keeping Hanukkah. What would we do about it? Well, we would do something. I mean, we would try and stop it. We wouldn't just let Hanukkah disappear. Well, with all due respect to Hanukkah, I love Hanukkah. Hanukkah's incredible. Hanukkah's the Rabbanan. This is much more important. And we're watching it before our very eyes. We're watching another mitzvah, another huge part of Judaism, which is disappearing from Am Yisrael.
But let me ask you this question. I mean, when you look at the big picture, when you realize today that the fastest growing segment of the Jewish community is unaffiliated. And when you have unaffiliated Jews, then how do you reach them?
So you're asking the $64,000 question. There's no easy answer. I will say that it is surprising how many at some point in their lives do suddenly become interested. And I have in my talks on Jewish identity, which I speak to all kinds of audiences from, you know, strictly Orthodox, you know, ultra-Orthodox, centrist Orthodox, you know, conservative form, whatever, and the things, the principles really apply. So one of the things that I talk about is the timeline of Jewish involvement, which you could be done, we'll have to go for Catholics or Protestants, but I speak about it for us. And the idea is that most people grow up with some kind of Jewish identity when they're a kid. And then they will have, whether religious or not religious, but they have an identity. They have some holidays when they're growing up. They have some religious school. Still today, bar bat mitzvah, the vast majority. And then in their teens and 20s, people lose interest. They get into career, fun, you know, whatever it's going to be. But then later in life, people come back. And that's why you see 30s and 40-somethings are in shul or involved in Jewish activities where they never were when they were in their 20s. So the point is that even an unaffiliated person, at different points in their life, they are going to start looking for something and want a connection. How far they'll take it is up to them. So what we want to do is we want to try and make sure that as a minimum, it's only a minimum, but as a minimum, the big decisions, they're keeping close to home, meaning that they're not going to make a lifelong, permanent decision. That's why we want to encourage them to marry another Jew. Whether they're Jewish after that, I don't know, but at least stay like, we want them to choose, you know, when the time is at Neva Esrim, choose Jewish burial, you know, for the parents, for themselves. You know, so it's a long-term process, and it's an educational process, and it's not simple, but it can be done. By the way, just as a practical suggestion, because you mentioned very well at the beginning in terms of, you know, the last minute decision, you only have a few hours to make a decision. So this is the advantage of pre-need arrangements. And again, I don't get a commission from funeral homes, but the difference in terms of finances, you know, a person puts away, you know, $25 a month, you know, in their 40s, then it's all taken care of. That's all it is. There's no question it's planned, it's arranged, there's no question that the money's... That's the solution. The solution is talk about it with people in their 40s, that shul should have discussions about it, should have speakers about it. I speak about it. Other people speak about it. You know, there's a video I have on the subject, which is on Jewish.tv, my book, articles that you saw in Jewish Action, the more the better, me, anybody else, the more the better, make it an issue so that people in their 40s and 50s make the decision, plan accordingly, and then you don't have to deal with it when they're in their 70s.
Very good. Excellent. Well, listen, continue with your great work. It sounds really unbelievable that you've brought up an issue that I'm sure many of the people in the listening audience have never even thought about, just took for granted, and yashar koach to you. So it's Doron Kornbluth, who is out there and also is a speaker, and I'm sure you could contact. How do people contact you, by the way?
My website, doronkornbluth.com, doronkornbluth.com. It has all information about my books, my talks, my tour guiding in Israel. Love to meet you in person.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day. And thank you for writing the article in the Jewish Action. Okay? So long.
Thanks very much for having me speak with you. Thanks.
Bye-bye.